You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the 56th episode of Warriors Off Court, the San Francisco Chronicles NBA podcast. I'm your host, Warriors beat writer Connor Letourneau, and today I'm joined by Enterprise sports writer Ron Krojcik. Ron has chipped in on our Warriors coverage all season. On Tuesday afternoon, we caught up about the sexual assault allegation against ex-Warriors assistant Luke Walton, the re-emergence of Andrew Bogut, why Golden State is motivated to get this first-round series done in 5 games, and much, much more. We'll have our conversation right after the break.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Ron and I chatted at the Warriors facility Tuesday afternoon. To kick things off, I asked Ron about the recent sexual assault allegations against Luke Walton.
Ron, we're here in the bowels of Oakland Convention Center ahead of Warriors practice. We were a couple of days removed from Game 4. We're getting ready for Game 5 now. Never a dull day on this beat. Never. It feels like every single day there's news. Last night I'm walking around Alameda thinking, you know, it's 10 p.m. at night, thinking, you know, I can hang out a little bit. And the news about Luke Walton drops and comes out that the allegations against Luke, just in case you aren't aware, there was a sexual assault allegation made against Luke Walton, now the head coach of the Sacramento Kings, by a female reporter, a former female reporter who had worked with Luke in LA. And the reason we're talking about this is because the allegation reportedly happened when Luke was an assistant coach with the Warriors. I looked at the lawsuit and it does not actually say the date of the alleged allegation or the alleged incident, but we're led to believe that it was sometime in 2014 because her book that she wrote and Luke wrote the foreword to came out in 2014, and she said that she was giving him a copy of the book because he had written the foreword. So that would probably be Luke's first year.
14-15.
I believe we don't know whether or not it could be his first year or second year. He was only with the Warriors 2 years. And it was during a Los Angeles road trip against the Lakers. So it's kind of hazy, a lot of the details, but I'm not going to sit here and ask whether or not the allegations are true, your personal opinion on Luke. That's we don't know whether or not this happened. All we know is what the situation being alleged is. I think the important thing for the Warriors right now is a lot of these guys on the team have close personal relationships with Luke. We all are well aware that Steve counts Luke as one of his closest friends. Whenever you have a close friend dealing with a pretty intense situation like this, in a very public situation like this, how much do you think your thoughts go there, even when you're dealing with, you know, something as pressing like a Game 5 of a playoff series?
Fair question. I think, as you said, it's really more relevant to Steve Kerr, who's been close to Luke for many years. I think Steve's intelligent enough and smart enough to separate basketball and real life, and this is obviously a real life situation far removed from basketball and very serious, if it's true. But as you noted, we don't know. That's something there's no way of knowing. But I'm sure Steve's a little shook by it, as you'd expect. And I'll be curious to see what his reaction is today at practice. But, you know, it's a hard and uncomfortable spot for him to be in to answer those questions. And, and move forward. I can't imagine it would really. I mean, Luke's been gone for, what, 3 years from the Warriors. So as close as the players are to him, you know, it's not like he's been around every day for the last 3 years. So it's uncomfortable news and surprising news, but I think it's a separate issue.
Yeah, no, definitely. And the reality is, all Steve can really do is shoot him a call, shoot him a text, and, you know, express support for him. It's not the type of situation where he's going to benefit Luke by, you know, sitting around and worrying about it all day. Steve has a job to do, and they definitely are motivated to come out and get a game five. This is a situation where the Warriors, I think, feel pretty confident they're going to win the series, but rest days matter in the playoffs, especially since, you know, the Warriors kind of got a break a little bit yesterday when the Rockets fell in game four to the Jazz. So the Jazz and Rockets will be playing game five on Wednesday. Obviously, the Warriors play game five against the Clippers on Wednesday. Assuming both teams win game five, they'll be on level playing field in terms of rest days. So we're looking at potentially a game one of the next round on Sunday. So they'll have a few days between games to get ready. But, you know, if the Warriors lose game five and the game one is still on Sunday, the Warriors could be coming off, you know, one day between games, potentially, maybe two. That's not an easy situation to be in, especially when you're facing a team that's probably your toughest opponent in the West.
No, and it could potentially be 1.5 days, really, because if the Warriors and Rockets wrap up by Friday, I believe the next round would begin Sunday and probably Sunday afternoon, right? Because that's the prime time TV slot or the prime marquee TV slot, 12:30 Pacific. And there's no way of knowing, but history suggests that they want to play a weekend game for TV ratings. So if it go, even if as long as both series end by Friday, they probably would start on Sunday. So, yeah, there's a huge advantage, an enormous advantage to the Warriors winning game five and not going back to L.A. Plus, going back to L.A. put a lot of pressure on them. You know, then the lead's down to 3-2. The Clippers have some momentum, and you start thinking, uh-oh, what if they could, you know, steal one at home? So the thing we've learned, I think, from the playoffs is it's easy to think one game leads to the next, but it really doesn't. You know, the Warriors had that historic collapse in game two and came out like the champs that they've been in game three. So I don't think the way things happen in LA really gives us much indication of what's going to happen tomorrow. I do think the Warriors know the stakes. They know the urgency of it. I would think they would play with that sharpness and focus and crispness that they did in LA. But we'll find out tomorrow. But you're right. There's more at stake than you'd think for a team ahead 3-1, no question.
And kind of building off that crispness, the foul issues have been an ongoing problem for Steph Curry in this series. He hasn't had fewer than four in a game this entire series. Specifically, he's been getting an early foul trouble, which really messes up the Warriors' substitution patterns. You saw specifically early in the series, it seemed like Kerr was kind of struggling to figure out who to put out there. And he even said after that game two collapse that he was not happy with his performance and he didn't like the groups he put out there. But more importantly, it's not just the substitution patterns. You just want Steph on the floor in a playoff game as much as humanly possible, because as we all know, he just changes the game so much just by being there. He may not be making his shots. He may have a ton of turnovers, but he just commands so much defensive attention. What do you think is going to be the key to him figuring out foul trouble? And what do you think has been the specific problem in this series?
Well, I think people, you know, it's easy to forget. You know, one of the reasons they collapsed the way they did in game two was he was on the bench for most of the third quarter. I believe picked up his fourth foul, and you know, as you said, it changes the geometry of the game when they don't have to guard this guy who can shoot from 25, 30, 35 feet, sometimes longer. And I think he's wasted some early fouls, you know, some silly, unnecessary reach-in fouls. It's always been his shortcoming on defense as he reaches. you know, it's an easy thing. I mean, I reached a lot when I played in high school, but I was slow. Steph doesn't have that excuse. And that's the thing. I think, you know, as you wrote the other day, and he wrote on his shoe, no reaching. He's quick enough. He's capable of not reaching and playing smarter defense, moving his feet, not giving up those easy fouls. It seems like a no big deal when he reaches and gets a foul 4 minutes into the game that's not a shooting foul and the Clippers just inbounded out of bounds. But that's it's a count. It counts, right? It gets him closer to foul trouble where Kerr has to adjust his rotation. So, I mean, Steph spent so much energy on offense, and he's obviously not a great defensive player, although I think at times he's shown he can be a very good defensive player. But it's easy for him to focus on offense given everything he does offensively. But he doesn't have to play great defense. He just needs to be okay and stay out of foul trouble. And I would think trying to be more conscious of that right off the bat and not giving up those one or two quick, easy fouls in the first quarter that he always seems to get, that's the first step for them.
Yeah, and he did a better job of that in game four. Right. After picking up those three early fouls, he didn't get another one while the game was still in doubt, you know, while the win was still in doubt. So I think that's something to build off of going forward for sure. One thing that was – there were several interesting things from Clay in postgame after game four, but one of them was that he went out of his way to say that he went out of his way to say that the Rockets are their opponent and that, you know, they want to get this done quickly to avoid the rest days. What did you think about him kind of breaking the unwritten rule in basketball, which is to look ahead to the next opponent?
Well, I think it's kind of Clay being Clay, right? Steph kind of Steph, Clay being Clay. Certainly not conscious, certainly not calculated. I'm sure it just sort of slipped out. But it's natural, given everything the Warriors have accomplished, given how young the Clippers are, it's natural for them to view that this way. This because it isn't about winning this series as much as it's about the entire journey and what gives them the best chance of winning another championship. It's not – he shouldn't have said it, right? But – I don't think it's a particularly big deal that he did. I mean, I don't think it's going to motivate the Clippers anymore. I've always not bought into that cliche. I mean, at this stage, everybody's motivated. Everybody wants to win. It's the playoffs. The Warriors are better than the Clippers.
So, a lot better.
So they if they play to their capabilities, they're going to win. And they really have, other than a quarter and a half, right? The second half of the third quarter and the fourth quarter in game two, when they weren't just mediocre, they were atrocious, mostly on defense, and that's the only reason we're even looking at a game five to cover tomorrow night. So I think it's sort of natural. I think it's just Clay's. It shows sort of Clay's low key vibe, right? And there's an authenticity there in what he was saying and thinking, and basically, you know, not filtering his thoughts. But I'm sure everybody on the Warriors is thinking that hey, look, Houston's rolling through their half. We better get done so we have a similar amount of rest and we're ready for that series, because you know the Rockets are going to be beyond engaged in trying to take down the Warriors.
Yeah, and I love talking to Clay for that reason, because he doesn't feed you the cliches. Everything he says is real, and you can get a real pulse on where the team's mindset is by talking to him, because other guys, it's human nature. Of course the Warriors are thinking about the Rockets.
Right.
Of course. I mean, to be.
Well, Clay, I think it's got to get him in the right mood. I mean, he can be very bland and dull. Right. But if you get him in the right mood, which he obviously was after scoring 30-whatever in game four and rediscovering his shooting touch, then you get a certain unfiltered, real glimpse into his mind and into the Warriors' thinking. And that's what happened after game four.
Yeah. And, you know, it's you got to love when you get a lead a game story with a guy jumping in the Pacific Ocean. So hat tip to Clay for giving that response.
Well, I think one part of that story that I found kind of interesting was that he played beach volleyball, and I can only imagine the angst if he twists an ankle playing beach volleyball, right? I mean, these guys, I understand the players, you know, they can't not live, right? You got to go do things, and jumping in the ocean makes perfect. It's kind of a cool way to refocus yourself, but I'm guessing the beach volleyball game was very casual and low speed. I'm sure Clay's.
I don't know about that. Clay's the type of guy who's incredibly competitive. He might be. I tell people I think he's as competitive with Draymond as Draymond Green, which is saying a lot.
In a different way.
In a different way, but he. I've talked to people who've played ping pong against him, and they're like, dude. I thought I was just playing ping pong, and he took it to another level.
Well, I'm sure Steve Kerr wouldn't mind a vicious game of ping pong between playoff games. A vicious game of beach volleyball might be a little different, but yeah, I'm assuming Clay went low speed at that. But the image of him jumping in the Pacific, right, even if we don't have photos, the image and him talking about that is pretty cool and kind of you know, it kind of reminds people that these guys aren't robots, right? This isn't – I mean, that's where I got sort of amused during the course of the season when they lost, you know, those home games by 25-30 and some fans are acting like it's the end of the world. Again, they're not robots. You know, they're human beings. They have good games and occasionally they have bad games. And they, much like all of us in our jobs, find ways to re-engage, find ways to get remotivated. And Clay's was jumping in the ocean, so good for him.
Yeah, no, definitely. And one I don't want to say surprising, but impressive development in this series has been Andrew Bogut. Obviously, we've all talked at length about the DeMarcus Cousins injury, how that's changed the center rotation, obviously putting the onus on Kevon Looney and Andrew Bogut to play a lot of meaningful minutes, not just in this series, but going forward throughout the playoffs. And Bogut has just been super solid. And I was looking at his numbers today. He's up in every major statistical category from his last playoffs in 2016 with the Warriors. And I think he is not just better than he was when he was last traded, when he was last with the Warriors, but I think he's significantly better. He just looks lighter. He's fresher mentally, physically. He's doing every little thing you need him to do, setting good screens, making great passes, orchestrating not just the defense, but he's been a fulcrum of that offense at times too. What have you thought about what he's provided this group on short notice?
I just love watching the way he plays. You see the way, sort of the subtle way he moves his body to sort of reset a screen if the defender is hedging one way or the other. He's a really good passer, which is a hard skill to find in a 7-footer. You know, he's got good hands, very soft passes, good vision. He sees the court well. I agree. I mean, I think I always liked the way he played, but it seems like it's accentuated now compared to before. And you're right, he also seems to have a freshness in his legs, which no doubt is due to the limited schedule he played in Australia, right? I think 30 games and once a week, if I remember correctly. And at 34, that's important. Although if you look at history, right, and this goes back to that story I did last year on Steph turning 30. Centers last longer than guards, right? They're not running as much. So it makes...
Especially 7-foot centers.
Exactly.
Not the Draymond Greens of the world.
Right, of course. The traditional centers, right. Yeah. I mean, if you look throughout history, you know, who are the players who played into their 40s? It's Kareem and these big lumbering 7-footers who are very good players but don't have the same toll on their body as a 6'2 guard, as Kevin Johnson, who had leg injuries. And not to say Steph's going to have leg injuries, but Steph's not going to play as long as most centers. That's just, if you look at history and the body type and the style of game. So I think that factors into what's happening with Bogut and probably factored into the Warriors' thinking is, hey, he's still got enough left. I mean, that was all I remember being with you here the day they signed him and writing a quick column saying, yeah, this makes a lot of sense, but does he have enough left in the tank? Because we all remember him kind of looking a little tired and old when he left here, right? But he had a bunch of injuries, and now he seems to have recovered, and he's fresh enough to play the minutes they need. It doesn't need to be 35, right? It's 20, 18, you know, enough to give them that presence in there against big centers. It'll be interesting if they do advance how that works in the Rockets series with Capella, who's a different kind of center, right? Mm-hmm. And I would think Looney would be probably more valuable with the screen and rolls and stuff. But Bogut's very good, and he gives something gives the Warriors something they don't have without him, and certainly not without Cousins, you know, that contrast at center.
And you can speak to this better than I can just as a father, but the big difference, probably the biggest difference in Andrew Bogut's life since he was last with the Warriors is he now has two kids. He has two young sons. And talking to people around the team, when he left the Warriors, he was very cynical. I think he was very jaded. I think he was over the NBA. He was tired of the line. He was tired of the fakeness. And I think having two kids stepping away from the league for a while has helped him find perspective. And he doesn't seem to be getting as annoyed by things as he used to. He's kind of staying above the fray, and he's been a very positive, kind of calming influence on the locker room, which I think has been a welcome change. I mean, everyone liked him his last go around. He was a very likable dude. He was funny. He had that sarcasm, that wit. But I do think when you're around someone every single day who's negative and pessimistic, it kind of wear on a locker room. And I think he's a lot more positive now, which I think is big.
Well, there's no way having a kid doesn't change you. I can speak for that. And you know, I don't know firsthand how it's affected him, but he does seem more upbeat than he did previously. I would agree with that. He's always been kind of had that edge to him, right? That, like you said, sort of sarcastic humor. He's a very smart guy. So yeah, I mean, if that's sort of the root of his attitude being more positive, then you know, good for him. I mean, it's natural, right? I mean, my son's 19 now, but I mean, I remember the first couple of years. I don't remember if I was more positive. I was more tired. I mean, he's in a different situation, obviously, with his career demands and the travel, that he's probably not around the kids every single day. But you know, yeah, I mean, it definitely gives you another dimension to your life, right? I mean, I think we all probably are more productive when we have a second dimension in our life. It's not just a one-track world. Anyway, it's certainly he certainly seems very engaged. You watch him on the bench when he's not playing; he's very very involved and very much part of the team effort.
And the last thing I kind of wanted to talk about was just kind of the overall vibe and mood of these playoffs. It's kind of a weird dynamic for these playoffs, because the big kind of cloud hanging over these playoffs is the offseason, is this summer coming up. Because this, I've said many times, this is probably going to be the biggest summer in franchise history. They have 9 of 15 players who are going to hit free agency. Some are pretty big names: Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, who is not going to be a free agent this summer. His status could be in flux this summer because of potential stalls in his contract negotiations with the Warriors, which I wrote about a few days ago. I think it's very possible that he ends up being on the trading block this summer, given what it looks like, you know, where it looks like both teams are at in terms of those contract negotiations. So there's just a lot of questions looming over this franchise. And how do you feel? Because the weird thing about it is, regardless of whether or not the Warriors win a title, it's not going to change what happens this summer. Kevin Durant's probably gone regardless of whether or not they win a title. You know, all these questions still need to be answered regardless of whether or not they win a title. So this whole run feels kind of like this is kind of the last hurrah, and we kind of need to get through these next couple months with each other, and then we can move on and do whatever we're going to do, but we just need to win one more and then move on. What do you think of that dynamic?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. You know, as you know, I worked on a story on the impact of the contract year, which should be out soon in the Chronicle. And Ron Adams, assistant coach, had an interesting quote to me about how, you know, anytime a big name free agent, Durant, Kyrie Irving, whomever, is approaching that summer, it's going to be these constant questions about the future. Whereas Adams' point was, to be an athlete at this level, you have to live in the present. It's got to be the next practice, the next game, because you can't succeed at this level without thinking that way. So he said there's really kind of a disconnect between the way the media has to operate, and our job is to look ahead more than ever, and the athletes have to operate more, you know, now in the moment. So that's always going to be a conflict, and as I wrote about, it's getting more and more of a conflict. But you're right, it's an unusual summer given the volume of players headed that way. But I think it's easy to separate. You know, it's like you said, it's gonna happen either way, and the Warriors have a unique chance at history here to win 3 in a row, which hasn't happened since 2002, I believe. An even more historic chance to go to the finals 5 years in a row, which hasn't happened since the 60s. Only happened once, mm-hmm. the Celtics, when they went 9 or 10 times in a row. So I think Steve Kerr's job and he was very good at this sort of messaging is, hey, we have a chance that very few teams ever have throughout the history of the game. Let's stay focused on that, and we'll deal with July 1 when it gets here. And that's really, you know, been the case all along. It's really what Kevin Durant should have said to the free agent questions is, you know, hey, I'm trying to win a championship. I'll deal with that July 1. Because there's nothing you can do between it before now and then. You know, maybe he's decided, maybe he hasn't. Maybe he's had covert conversations. Maybe, you know, probably has.
Yeah.
But that's sort of not in the public domain at this point, and nor should it be. I mean, the playoffs can be very compelling. You're right. There's a strange undercurrent, I think. But I found it more interesting than ever this year, in part watching the East, because, you know, the East was sort of a foregone conclusion the last few years as well with LeBron and the Cavs. And now that that's out of the mix, you know, Giannis is sort of in full bloom. I mean, some of his games are enormously entertaining.
Yeah.
To see how the Sixers deal with their, you know, very talented starting five. You know, Toronto and its history of playoff struggles. Boston, which seems to be putting it together finally. And there's a lot of very interesting storylines in the East. And I think the East semifinals, the conference semifinals in both the East and West could be tremendous. I mean, because the East matchups are going to be really compelling. And if the Warriors play the Rockets, which seems likely, that's going to be compelling. So it's if you can separate the summer from the spring, it's going to be a very, very entertaining and fascinating march here to the finals.
But as we talked about earlier, it's just as much as a professional athlete as you want to stay in the present and you want to focus on the day-to-day, you are a human being,
right.
And it is impossible not to look forward and look ahead. And that's why, as we discussed earlier, it was a little refreshing to hear Clay straight up say the Rockets are our opponent. And the reality is every player has a keen awareness on a daily basis that things are going to be a lot different. And I think that can be a good thing because you're kind of like, this is – we need to cherish this. But it feels more like, you know what, we kind of just need to get through this.
Right.
And then do our jobs, win a title, and then we can – not talk to each other anymore. Right. You know, that's more the vibe I felt rather than, hey, buddy, like, right, let's just win a title, you know?
Right. Well, and you're around the Warriors every day. So that's not surprising. And it's interesting. The thing about Clay's sort of slip up is, right, that's all connected. I mean, how the Warriors complete this series affects how they do in the next series. And as you noted, I'm not so sure what happens in the next 6 weeks, 2 months affects what happens in the summer. I think some of that is probably already, at least mentally. I mean, I would think Durant – I mean, obviously, like you said, it's human nature. Durant's probably thought, okay, what – you know, if he hasn't nailed it down, it's pretty clear in his mind or in the back of his mind, he has an idea of what's going to happen. And this isn't going to change it.
There might be a little better chance of him coming back if they lose. They're a little bit better.
Yeah.
Just because he might not like the optics, but –
I don't think, yeah, maybe, but I
it would be marginal.
Yeah, and I think really at the root of it, it's not going to affect it that much. I think there's larger issues in play. So,
right. Well, Ron, I appreciate you joining me. It's always great chatting with you. We will have tons of great content throughout this series and throughout the playoffs, and Ron will be joining me every step of the way. So, thanks as always.
Thanks for having me, Connor.
I want to thank Ron Krocek for joining me on this week's podcast. It's always good chatting Warriors with someone who has followed the team as long as he has. Warriors Off Court is part of the San Francisco Chronicle Podcast Network. Audrey Cooper is the editor-in-chief. If you like this show, we'd love it if you'd subscribe to it wherever you get your podcasts. And if you've got a minute to give us a quick review, that helps us build our audience so we can keep growing. Follow me on Twitter at @Con_Cron and email me at claterno@sfchronicle.com. Support Warriors Off Court and a lot of great journalism with a subscription to the San Francisco Chronicle. There are print and digital editions. Find out more at sfchronicle.com/subscribe.